Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, we say goodbye to the drag show nightclub and cabaret venue, Oasis. Then we talk to the new San Francisco Drag Laureate about the 10th anniversary of Drag Story Hour, and get ready to laugh because the Golden Girls Live drag parody is back for the holidays. Today's show is about the queens. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. The beginning of 2026 may be bittersweet for patrons of Oasis. That's because the drag show nightclub and cabaret venue is closing on New Year's Eve. According to Oasis's website, the club is shutting down due to the rising cost of operations, along with declining attendance and sales. Oasis has been around for nearly 11 years. Talented local artists and major stars like Cher have graced its stages. Many of the contestants from RuPaul's Drag Race performed there. The Sights and Sounds team recently went down to San Francisco's SoMa District, and we met with the venue's owner, Darcy Drollinger. He gave us a tour of the club and told us about the significance of Oasis. Darcy was also San Francisco's first drag laureate. There was a lot of construction happening the day of our visit, so please pardon the noise. So we're at the corner of 11th and Folsom, and they're doing a lot of construction, so forgive the noise. I don't usually go to nightclubs in the daytime, but we're here at Oasis, the gay nightclub, the much-loved nightclub, and we're here because it is supposed to close at the end of 2025. So, it's so cool. I've never been here before, actually. And I love that the door, what's on the door, is all this really cool, beautiful graffiti. Art, and it says safe space with little hearts and red lips. So I love red hearts and red lips. So this looks like my scene. So let's go on in. So we're in the main, I guess, event space, and there is a runway and there is a stage and red curtains. And we are here to see the man behind the vision of this great space.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, Mr. Darcy Drollinger. Hello.
Hey. Thanks for coming over.
Thanks for having us. I want a tour because I have not been to Oasis. Shame on me.
Shame on you. Oh, my goodness.
I lost points.
You better come before we close.
I will be here, and I will be wearing some big hair.
Okay.
So let's...
You want to do a little tour?
Yeah, let's do a little tour. So right now, this is what, the main...
This is the main performance space, the main room. And what you're standing on is sometimes, you know, the floor underneath all the cabaret tables for our cabaret shows. It's also the dance floor when we move everything away. Underneath this used to be a swimming pool. And it was originally a diving school, and it was a swimming pool with some cinder block walls, and then they put a roof on it, and it became a gay bathhouse, and then it had a lot of other iterations, but when we took it over, we decided to fill in the pool because we didn't want to navigate a swimming pool then. But anyway, the swimming pool was here, and the roof does not retract anymore. But we have this runway that's a modular runway that can be transformed into any configuration. We've got a 13 by 9 video wall that has really upgraded a lot of the performances.
And some of the people that have been on that stage have been Doja Cat,
Cher, Jane Fonda, along with every amazing real girl, Sasha Colby. Almost, you know, every winner of Drag Race has been on that stage. Alaska, many, many times,
Big
you know.
Frida
so,
this
oh
year.
Yeah, Big Frida came, which was really, really pretty amazing. So,
hello, y'all had Cher.
I know, right? And she was so chill. Like, no, her writer for the dressing room was a 6-pack of Dr. Pepper and a couple of granola bars.
That was it.
For a diva like that, yeah, she could have had anything, right?
So much history here. And so you opened this with, is it Jason Bibo?
Yep.
Jeffrey Benjamin and the late Heckalina?
Yes.
the layout, the design, this was all in the vision?
We had looked at a whole lot of different spaces and we weren't sure we were going to get this to happen. And, you know, on a Monday, it was like, the deal's not going to happen. On Thursday, they're like, here's the keys. You have 3 months free rent, go. And we hadn't raised any money yet. And so at that point, we had to just, like, you know, go for it. And this place was crazy. Like, half of this space was carpeted, and the owners had, instead of cleaning the carpets, just painted over the carpets with exterior house paint. Like, it was bonkers. And, like, it had been sitting for so long, the amount of dust and sticky film on everything, it felt almost like, how can we ever turn this into something cute? But we really, you know, we really were focused and dedicated to the community, right? So we took the kitchen and we made it into a dressing room, but a real dressing room that's respectful to these artists. Because a lot of times, myself included as a performer, would perform in clubs where I'd have to use the public bathroom to change, or I'd have to use the electrical closet to do a quick change. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I want to give the artists here a big dressing room. We have 12 stations. They all have an outlet. They have their own bathroom. They've got a storage closet, you know, and say, like, I see you as performers. And, you know, we did the same thing with the bathrooms. We wanted a very inclusive bathrooms, so they're all genders, or with not just stalls, but actual closing doors. So it is feels inclusive and safe for everybody. It's been important to really design a space for the community because it was birthed out of the community.
Let's walk around
a
little bit.
Tour, are we? Come on up.
You know, this space is not only a space of artists, but just the art that's in here. It's a very artistic, you know, design
and,
space.
And here's the champagne. This is the champagne room. The
champagne room.
I wanted to make this room into something that could be for small private parties, for smaller events.
So this room is smaller. And so there's also a bar in here, and there's a small stage, and it has these gorgeous pink curtains. It's gorgeous. The art in here is incredible. You all have done so much. There's great programs here, like the weekly drag show Princess, Reparations, which is an all-Black drag show. How does Oasis, I don't want to say compare, but how is Oasis different and unique compared to maybe other queer venues?
What sets us apart is that we are very much a hybrid space. We are a cabaret, we're a nightclub, we're a performing arts venue, we're a community space. We hold a lot of fundraisers here. We are sort of birthed out of the community, so we became, you know, really part of the community. What I'm seeing more and more is that we are more of a performing arts venue that does club events versus a nightclub that does performing arts events. And I think that what's really sets us apart are our big theatrical productions. For the people that do know and get to come see it, it's amazing. For a lot of other people, they don't realize what's actually going on here, and they think that we are simply a nightclub. And there's nothing wrong with that, but, you know, part of the reason I started this was for the cabaret and the theater. That is sort of what does set us apart.
So I'm looking at a sign right here. And it says, this bar is closed. And it brought up feelings for me. And it's right by where we're standing, where it says Darcy Champagne Room. And you all are supposed to close, you know, in several weeks. Mm-hmm. So how are you feeling?
You know, after 11 years, I've got a lot of my identity wrapped up in this space. And I can't really see and look to the future of, like, who I am without Oasis. And, you know, there's part of me that feels like I'm abandoning a lot of people. And I also, you know, like, I didn't necessarily choose to do this. It was out of necessity. You know, we were not making the money that we were spending because of my dedication to the quality of what we do here and being able to pay the artists. And after a while that, you know, when the funding sort of stopped, I didn't have a choice. And, you know, it is challenging when you're looking for, especially corporate or federal or even state funding, because we are a nonprofit, but we also support drag queens and burlesque dancers, and people don't see those sometimes as art. But I'm sort of, my dedication to my whole life is to prove to everybody that that is art and these are artists. And it also, there's a line in Rocky Horror in one of the songs that says, "Don't dream it, be it." And I really like push that on everyone, because, you know, it's so easy to dream of something, but if you have the courage to start that train going, most of the time people get on. Like, this place would not exist if I had just dreamed it. But when I was like, we're doing this, so many people were like, yes, we're doing this. And it was very powerful to feel like, you know, we don't have to depend on these rich club owners or, you know, real estate people, that we can make our own space, and the community can actually make our own venue happen. And I feel like, and I hope that that inspires other people to feel empowered to be able to do bigger things. And so I'm not going anywhere. No, these people aren't going anywhere. There might be a miracle and this place gets saved. We might take a year to figure out what we're doing and open a new space. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the same as then they start the construction. Is that a sign?
I know. I mean, I keep looking for signs all the time. I'm like, universe, tell me what to do. Tell me what to do, because I don't really know what I'm doing after this is done. I mean, I'd love to write a book about making this place happen. We're working on a documentary about it. Let's get out of this. Yeah. Let's get out of this.
For people that are just tuning in, I am at the Iconic Gay Nightclub Oasis in San Francisco, here with the club's owner, Darcy Drollinger, who is also the first drag laureate. And this iconic space is closing its doors at the end of this year, 2025.
We opened on New Year's Eve and we're closing on New Year's Eve.
You're closing, so people gotta get here to New Year's Eve. Get here on New Year's Eve so they can party one last time. But is it one last time? I mean, is there something people can do to?
Well, yes.
To think? I mean, because this is so many people that have come on our show always talk about Oasis, and you know, things to do at Oasis. And I know people outside of the Bay Area who like to come here. Is there some hope?
You know, there is hope. We need somebody that can understand the importance of this space. It could be saved. We need, you know, we need someone who has the money and wants the tax write-off. It's, you know, the nonprofit is already running the whole main space, and the nonprofit produces all the shows here. I really think that to be able to do the work that we're trying to do, it needs to be subsidized by the nonprofit. When asked, like, oh, well, why don't you just pay people less? Don't have so much fancy stuff happening. And I don't want to run an organization like that. I'd rather close than downgrade what we do.
I'm thinking of these milestones for you. You just, you know, passed the crown for being drag laureate of San Francisco. Oasis is turning 11.
Yep.
Closing. What is all of this is happening this year? How are you?
Yeah, it makes me, you know, anxious too to even walk by. That, I mean, this mural on the outside of this building has become so iconic, and to the thought of that getting painted over just actually makes me want to cry a little bit. So, I'm you know, and I've heard from so many people how much this space has changed their life, and it's great to be able to hear it. And it makes it, I get so full of emotion. It's not really sadness so much, but just something so unique that happened over a period of time that they're gonna look back at it in history. And I wanna leave it not like a funeral, but like the most fabulous, you know, last month. And everyone should come and have one more experience and feel the energy, because it is very much like a family, and it really is special.
Yeah, space is like I said, when you see safe space on the outside and hearts, and you want to come in, and yeah. We're wrapping up here. We're in this dressing room with all the posters from all the events that you all have had over the years. I see Galentine's Day and Princess and Reparations. And I see really cool art here. So what do you want Oasis's legacy to be?
I want Oasis to be remembered for being a magical space that let everyone and supported everyone taking risks as artists and performers, and being a place that didn't just celebrate all of these performers, but elevated them and made this truly magical experience that didn't exist and frankly, you know, won't exist again. And, you know, I want it to be remembered not only as an amazing showroom, but a community space and an incubator that was able to really help artists flourish, and for our marginalized artists, the feeling of being seen.
Well, Darcy Drollinger, I am definitely going to come and party with y'all before you close. And thank you for all you've done for the arts community. And thank you for your time and just letting us see this really special space, this special venue.
Thank you for caring and seeing us.
That was Darcy Drollinger, owner of Oasis. For clarity, earlier in the interview, Darcy mentioned an arts foundation. He was referring to Oasis Arts, which collaborates with LGBTQ artists and artists of color. Oasis Arts is in partnership with the Oasis Nightclub. And again, the Club Oasis will close this New Year's Eve, but there are plenty of shows to check out until then. And we'll have a link to their events on our website. Coming up, a new queen has been crowned, and she's passionate about literacy. San Francisco's new drag laureate, Persia, is here. Stay with us. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. This has been a big year for performer and elementary school arts teacher Persia. Sorry, that music's good. I'm moving. She was recently crowned the second drag laureate for the city of San Francisco. And this year marks the 10th anniversary of the Drag Story Hour at the San Francisco Public Library. Persia is a founding member of Drag Story Hour and the program's first performer. The San Francisco Main Library is hosting an anniversary celebration for Drag Story Hour on Sunday, December 14th. And there will be all kinds of fun things for kids to do, like arts and crafts, and of course, storytelling. And joining me is the newly crowned San Francisco Drag Laureate, Miss Persia. Welcome!
Hi! Thank you so much for having me.
I am so happy that you're here, and you are busy, so I'm so happy that we were able to nab you for a little bit for the show. Congratulations on this new title.
Oh my goodness. Thank you. Thank you. It still feels like a dream. It's only been a month.
And it's been a big month, right?
Yeah, it's been a big month. But to be able to share this announcement with my current first grade students, former first grade students, people from my school community, people from the drag community, people from the school district, from the mayor's office, the city hall, everyone in one space was quite phenomenal, you know, because of, you know, we've been having a rough year with this new administration. So to be, to have space, to have the embrace and the love feels like a dream. And I feel so privileged and so honored. So I gotta keep working.
Yeah, I know. And I know when those laureate titles are they're a lot of work and you're out there, but there is such important work too as well. And so I could tell you're very enthusiastic and excited about what's to come. So again, you're the second person to hold this title. You're the first trans woman to hold this title, first Latina to hold this title. So many firsts. You're paving the way for so many people. And you mentioned your students, and you were crowned now at the elementary school where you teach. That's where you were crowned?
Yes. So they didn't know when the announcement was going to happen because, of course, the mayor has like is a very busy schedule. So everything was tentative. Oops.
You're there.
And so we didn't know. But then finally, when they were able to choose a time, they asked me where I wanted to have that official announcement. Of course, I wanted to have it at Oasis, but because of all the work that I do in different spaces, especially here at this elementary school, at this after-school program, they've given me the opportunity to be myself, to grow. And I've been here for such a long time, mm-hmm. and they've seen me transition. They've seen all the different chapters of my life. And it felt right to have it here and to share it with my students, to show them that no matter how they identify, there is no right way to live, to exist, and to resist, and to have politics aside, to have the mayor come here and the students see the mayor. Like, that was so beautiful. Like, the kids were like, oh my God, it's the mayor!
Okay.
And it was so beautiful. It was just such a, I always say I'm the luckiest person in the world because I really get to do everything I love. And again, I'm so humbled.
Wow, that's so exciting. And for, I really encourage folks to go on Persia's Instagram page to see the video. You looked absolutely stunning. I mean, just really absolutely stunning. Where do you get your fashions and drag style? Because I see some cultural inspiration behind it. But can you talk about the inspiration you have behind your fashion? Again, you were stunning. Stunning.
Oh, thank you. I didn't hear you. What'd you say?
such a drag queen. I need more compliments.
I know, always, never enough. Well, you know, I get my fashion sense from my parents, actually. I was born and raised in South Central LA, but my parents are from Mexico. And so I am very influenced by mariachi and other amazing Mexican things. And but then also I am, you know, pop culture in the U.S. really. So it's like a merging of both worlds. And so that's where I really draw my inspiration. It's like, you know, a little bit of mariachi, a little bit of disco.
I saw all of that. I saw some indigenous too. I mean, it was just like,
yeah. Totally. And I know I am, I don't know. I haven't been able to trace my family tree because we really don't know much of our history. At least it stopped with my grandparents and they passed mm-hmm. away. So I don't know how, and I don't want to get one of those blood ancestry things because, you know.
People get surprised.
I know. But no, just because I don't want my information out there.
I understand.
but yeah, so although it's just all those things and all the amazing people that I work with. I started drag at an old school. My first drag home was at it was called Esta Noche here in San Francisco. And it was the only Latino gay bar for a very long time until mm-hmm. it closed. And I was influenced by all of those ladies, you know, the big hair and the bedazzled dresses
yes.
and all the like old school heartbreaking songs, you know. But then I'm also inspired by punk and rock and so, you know, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, a little bit. No, I saw all of that and I looked through, you know, your Instagram and I just really enjoy the fashion. I mean, and I see you, you know, as an artist, as a performer, but also too, I see how you use your art skills with your fashion. And but let's talk about some stories. Once upon a time, Persia
yes.
was a founding member. It is a founding member of San Francisco's Drag Story Hour, and it was founded in 2015. Again, this is the 10th anniversary. You're one of the original performers. You're the first performer, excuse me. How did you get into that? What made you want to read to kids in drag in particular?
Well, funny story. I was actually this morning I was thinking about that because I'm always at the Eureka Branch Harvey Milk. Branch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's where the first Drag Story Hour took place. But I'm always there because I'm always getting books for my students because I read to them every day. And so I was there, you know, turning in some books, and then I just remembered. I was like, oh my God, I remember the first performance. I was so nervous because I was living like a double life, mm-hmm. you know, my drag at night and then my school life during the day. And those two worlds never mix until Drag Story Hour happened. And so the person who thought of this idea was Michelle T. And at the time she was working for Radar Productions. And so she came with this idea, and then it really got put together with Virgie Tobar, Julian Delgadillo, and some other folks, Vix from the library, who she just retired last year. And so they were like, you work at a school already, you have you have the background check, first of all, because we want to make sure, you know. So I have background checked. You're already a drag queen. You're already reading to kids. So this is perfect for you. And I was like, I don't know. But I said yes, because I'm always game for anything. And I just remember being so scared because, you know, I've been working in school since I was 17. And it was never told to my face, but it was always sort of suggested that I needed to tone it down with my queerness. And this is before I transitioned. So there was all this internalized like queer phobia that I didn't know I really had. Mm-hmm. And it was until that moment that I realized, oh my God, like I have all these things I need to, you know. But So the folks at Radar Productions were like, hey, you're a shoo-in. You're always updating your Facebook. I know I'm old.
Don't say that, Persh. You are not close in age. We are young. We're just older and young.
And so I would always update like funny like stories from the kids. And so then, yeah, so that's sort of how it started. And now it's been 10 years.
It's been 10 years. If you're just tuning in, I'm chatting with San Francisco's second drag laureate, Persia. Join her for the 10th anniversary celebration of Drag Story Hour at the San Francisco Main Public Library on December 14th. I forgot you work with kids, and kids will remind you how old you are.
yeah, that's why they're like, oh, you're on Facebook? Oh,
right. That's why I was like, what's wrong with that? I was like, what's wrong with that? But we only have we have about 5 minutes, Persia. So I just want to, and I know you and I, we just met, but I can already tell we could talk.
We could go on and on.
Yeah, we could talk because we were talking before the show. but so what can people expect when they go to the anniversary celebration at the library?
So we are going to have a lot of amazing performers who are mostly local, but we are bringing some other folks from other places from around the country who are going to come and make some art and read some books. And so it's just going to be a fun, glorious day. And we've partnered up with so many amazing organizations, but the De Young Museum is gonna be there. And they have a lot of cool things up their sleeve. I am so excited. I just did a drag story hour for them last week and they were telling me everything. I was like, yeah. So there's gonna be so many activities, so much fun. I know it starts at noon, but it's going to go by like that.
Yeah. Especially, and the San Francisco Main Library, I know when I've gone to the events, they have so much like cool stuff that they give away. And they have an event, they really go out. They really go all out.
They really do. I feel so honored and privileged because they really take care of me. And like I said in my speech on Sunday when Darcy stepped down from being the first drag laureate and welcomed me for us the second, at the end I gave a big shout out to the San Francisco Public Library because they don't ask me how to be an ally or how to show up. They show me. They're like, we have this for you. What do you think? And then I'm like, oh!
You're like, support, yes.
And it's just so incredible to be supported in such turbulent, you know, such you know, shaky times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You know, I want to go back to you as Little Persia, and you mentioned that you grew up in South Central Los Angeles. Was that where you developed your passion for books and for reading?
Well, you know, funny story. I have many stories, but anyway, funny story is that English is my second language, mm-hmm. and I didn't really learn English until I was in high school. And my parents work every day. They still do. They're about to retire next month, I think. I hope, we're crossing our fingers. But they've been working every day since I was, I don't know how many years old. And so literature really wasn't part of my growing up. Mm-hmm. I don't have a favorite children's book. And so that lack of is what has inspired me to keep doing this work, because I wish someone would have I wish my parents had the time to like read a book before I went to bed, or just anytime really. And so that lack of is what pushes me to do what I do now. And to see the little kids' faces when I do, like, you know, when I read one of my favorite books, Bodies Are Cool, I'm all, Bodies Are What? And they're like, hello! And so it's those things that really keep me going. And I know it's just so funny. I never had a favorite children's book. It's so sad.
Persia, I really appreciate, because I'm passionate about literacy. So when I read, you know, that was something that you were passionate about and that was part of your platform, I was really excited to have you on. Congratulations on everything. I'm excited. I can't wait to watch you as you fulfill this role as Drag Laureate. And congratulations on the 10th anniversary. And please come back, because I know you're going to have other things to do. And
please,
come,
yes, have me back. Yes. I'd love to talk.
Yes, I know. So we'll have to have you come back and we can talk a little longer.
I know. Give us an hour at least.
Ooh, we might get in trouble. I got to keep my job, Persia. I still got to keep my job.
Persia. I know, me too.
Persia, thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. Persia is the new San Francisco Drag Laureate. See her at Drag Story Hour for its 10th anniversary celebration at the San Francisco Main Public Library on Sunday, December 14th. Ooh, that music is good. Next up, you slice the cheesecake and I'll grab the ice cream out of the freezer. The Golden Girls Live Drag Show turns 20 and we'll talk to the actor who plays Blanche. Stay with us. Hey. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. The music is so good today. Okay, around this time last year, I was having a good time watching the Golden Girls Live, the Christmas episode. The drag tribute is to the iconic sitcom. The drag tribute to the iconic sitcom is returning to the Curran Theater in San Francisco this Thursday, December 4th to the 21st. And this year is extra special because it's the drag show's 20th anniversary. Matthew Martin has been part of the show for its entire 20-year run. He's a native San Franciscan drag artist, actor, and singer who plays Hollywood legends like Joan Crawford and Judy Garland. But during the holiday season, he transforms into the funny, sexy Southern Belle, Blanche Devereaux. Matthew is hilarious in this role, which was originally played by actress Rue McClanahan. And here's my conversation with Matthew Martin. Matthew Martin, welcome.
Thank you, Janae. How are y'all? Y'all doing good? Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm excited to have you and the Blanche inside of you. I'm excited to have on. I saw you last year play Blanche, and you were hilarious.
Thank you.
You were hilarious. I'm impressed that you guys can even just stay in character. A couple of times, you almost broke character, some of you all.
We have our moments, for sure. Yes.
Which is funny, too, when you guys do that, too, when you try to, like, stop laughing. But you all are hilarious.
Sometimes something goes wrong, or you know, and we just can't help it, you know. But, we try to keep a straight face. But it is very funny, especially with the audience laughing the way they do too. But comedy is a very serious business. And I think comedy 101 too, if you think you're so funny, you don't really need an audience. I mean, you know what I mean? You have to just play the intention of something, and, you know, don't think I'm funny up here. You know, that's for comedy. That's not the best way to go, I think, you know.
well, you all know what you're doing because you all have been doing this for 20 years. This production alone, you've been doing this for 20 years. How did you end up playing Blanche?
Well, actually, I'm the only cast member who's been playing it for 20 years from the very beginning. And we started at a friend's Victorian house in the front parlor. And it was just like 50 seats that were set up. It was a very in San Francisco kind of thing. And from there, it just grew and grew. And we moved to different theater spaces around town. Last year was our first year at the Current Theater in San Francisco. And I'm a native San Franciscan too. So having grown up and seeing so many wonderful shows and stars on that stage. And so to be up there is a great honor. And very surreal too. And but
because it's a huge theater.
So 1,667 seats.
I do want to go back to my question. So how did you end up playing Blanche? Did you pick her to play her or?
No, well, Heclina and I were great, great friends. And she had done something like a version of the Golden Girls before and then decided to. Well, the first thing was we went to see a production at Theater Rhino. I think it was in 2005. And I love Theater Rhinoceros and John Fisher, and I've done many productions there. But the Christmas show was Bent, which was a very serious, sad play. And this was like at Christmas time. And previously I had done a show called Christmas with the Crawfords, which was like a Joan Crawford Christmas kind of thing, which was a comedy. But we had stopped doing that. And so at Theater Rhino, it was Bent, which was a very serious thing. And we came out of the theater saying, you know, we've got to do something light and fun. And that's really where the idea was born to do it again. And I could play any of the parts, but anyway, so it just worked out that each one, Heclina was like well-suited to play Dorothy, that Bea Arthur part. So, and then it was our friend Cookie Dough who played Sophia, and sadly he passed away in 2015. And our friend Pollo Del Mar played Rose for the first few years that we did it too. And then Darcy came on as Rose, and a whole lot of times came on as Sophia. And just over the years, the production values, everything just got better and better. Now it's sort of, it's grown into the show that it has become. And, but from the minute we started doing it, we had audiences very responsive and appreciating it too. So, and for anybody in theater, you're very blessed to have that, you know, to have people who really want to come and see it. And they talk about coming to see it in July. They're ready for next year. So,
I was thinking about it all year. And you mentioned Heclina, and I definitely want to honor the great late Heclina.
My apartment here, he lived in the unit below me. We were very, very dear friends. And so we've all, it's been a tragedy that we've all gone through losing our friend. And but now the brilliant Coco Peru is playing Dorothy, whom you saw last year.
Yes, and who's fabulous.
Really, just a great person and a great actor. And so it's a real privilege to be on stage with Coco, for sure.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with drag artist Matthew Martin. He is one of the stars of the Golden Girls Live, the Christmas episodes, which is running at the Current Theater from December 4th to the 21st. Matthew plays the funny, sexy Southern Belle, Blanche Devereaux. And this is the Golden Girls Live's that doesn't sound right. This is the Golden Girls Live's. And this is the show's 20th anniversary.
That's it.
There we go. I was struggling. I was like, this is it. okay, so it's the 20th anniversary. What episodes are you all doing this year?
This year we're doing the artist, which involves a sculptor, and the three girls are sort of fighting over who's going to be, the model for the sculptor, or each one of us is making a play for the sculptor and sort of like competing for his attention and affection to be in it. So the three of us are basically, getting into it over the guy, the artist. And then the other one is, I think it's called What a Difference a Date Makes. And Dorothy reunites with a high school love who jilted her. And so they have a reunion and come together. And the subplot to that one too is Blanche is on a diet and trying to lose some weight to fit into her wedding dress so she can take a picture as she does every year. And it's really funny. And
Oh,
all
it is.
it's so well written, and everybody is very funny in their respective parts. And this one, more than the many other episodes that we've done, is like they get kind of down and dirty with some of the insults that go around. I mean, Blanche and Rose get into it in both episodes, and some of the lines are pretty harsh. I mean, wait, the audience, I don't want them to turn on me for
Oh no, we're gonna laugh.
yeah,
'Cause that's how
that
they used to get into it. I mean, they would get into
well,
it when they was still.
should I give one away, a line, one of the lines?
Go ahead, Blanche.
She goes, I find, well, Laszlo is the sculptor, and I'm preening about the fact that I'm gonna pose for Laszlo. And then the next thing you know, I find out that Rose has a key to his studio too. And so Laszlo's like doing sketches of her too. And Blanche isn't having it. And she goes, well, he asked me to pose for him, Rose says. And Blanche says, I'm sure I don't know why. He could go to SeaWorld if he wanted to see a naked whale. So it's like, but then she gets me back. She goes, or your bathtub. So then we get into it. So it's that kind of stuff.
They're gonna laugh. I mean, because, like I said, I watched the Golden Girls in the 80s, and I was a little girl. And I said, "What am I?" And as an adult, I said, "Why was I watching this? Why my mama let me watch these nasty older women?"
And well, they're all so good, the original actresses too. So
Oh
it's so
yeah.
funny and timeless. And I heard they've talked about doing remakes of it, and it's like, I'm sure it'd be funny in its own way, but it's like, I don't know, trying to repeat something, then or redo from the original sometimes can be tricky business,
Yeah,
I mean, that's
especially
why.
that was for its time, and that was such a
Yes,
revolutionary show because it was the
absolutely.
80s. It was like the
Right.
mid-80s to the early 90s. I mean, so that was for its time. The remake I like is what you all are doing.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
we definitely honor the original too. And I think that's the important thing, because people who come to see it's like Bible class. They know chapter and verse to these episodes, and the audiences, I mean, I always explain it, it's more of a happening than just going to the theater, because people are wearing their 80s Christmas sweaters, and the people dress up or as the Golden Girls, and they're so excited about it. So it's just always just a great event. It's more than just going to a show for me. And also being born and raised in here in San Francisco, I love looking at the audience and seeing the whole crazy quilt that makes up San Francisco is there, with the all shapes and sizes and persuasions, and old, young, gay, straight, everybody coming together and laughing and having a good time. So that's a great Christmas gift.
No, it is. And I was going to say that, for people, if they're kind of trying to figure out what to give for a holiday gift, I was like, this is something to give people because, I was like, I've been telling people, I'm like, buy tickets to shows, support artists. So.
Absolutely. Once people come, then it's like I sort of call it the gay nutcracker. It's like an annual pilgrimage. It's like they come, and some people, we take pictures after on stage, a meet and greet kind of thing, and people proudly say, this is the 10th year we've been coming. And then they bring more of the family, or they bring grandma, or it becomes a big holiday event for them annually too, like a traditional thing for them to do, which is like, that's a wonderful thing too. So it's great to see the same people a year later, like, there they are again.
And also too, and we just have a couple of minutes, but also too, the show, the set looks just like the set from the show, from the original show, which is just amazing. And it really transports you back
Yes,
to the 80s and 90s. It really is.
Well, wonderful Darcy Drollinger, when he took over as the producer, like 2015, all of the sets, the production values, everything, just with every year, they've really gotten better, and including the sets. So it blows my mind to think we started this in a Victorian parlor, and our set was a wrinkled painted sheet and hanging in the background. And now we've got a full-size kitchen and a living room and doors. And the set is very impressive too. That's Sarah Pikett and Matt Owens put that together too. And there's so many people behind the scenes making it happen, as always with shows. The tech crew, the costume, Becky Motor Lodge is our friend who does the hair. So another wonderful friend, Vanilla Meringue, did the makeup for photo shoots, and we have some appearances tomorrow. So there's so many people besides the people on stage that are, make the magic happen.
Anything that folks should expect? It's the 20th anniversary, so I imagine you all, it's gonna be fireworks
You
and
know
a
what?
lot of and a lot of cheesecake and.
Yeah, I think more of the same. I think just the fact that we've been the celebrating 20 years is an awesome landmark, but it's gonna be as much of a good time as it was the first year that we came to be. And it was like, it's always stressing about everyone's coming to have a good time, and we definitely promise that. So it's its own reward to say, wow, we have been doing this 20 years, and people have been coming to see this for 20 years. And it's like, that's no small thing, especially in theater, trying to, make something successful. And it's really the audiences that have made it the great success that it is. So we're very grateful for that too.
Well, Matthew Martin, it's been a pleasure. And I can't wait to see you
Oh,
on
thank you so
stage.
much. It's my pleasure too, darling. I'm slipping in my southern. I find like some people it's when I start rehearsing and doing the show, suddenly I just slip into the southern accent, and I don't even know that I'm doing
Well,
it.
that's all right, honey. That's all right.
But thank you both, you and Porfirio too. And this is it's been a thank you for having me, and it's wonderful to meet you, and I'm looking forward to seeing you at the show too.
I was channeling my grandmother from Mississippi at the end of that interview. That was actor Matthew Martin. You can see him in the Golden Girls Live, the Christmas episode, which is running at the Current Theater in San Francisco from December 4th to December 21st. And if you attend the show this opening weekend, you'll be able to see a performance by Cindy Fee, who sang the Golden Girls theme song during the show's TV run. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, our board operator, Damian Miner, our sound engineer, Devin Strolovich, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. An extra shout out to Porfirio because he worked really, really hard on producing this episode. So I appreciate him so much. There's a lot of things to do for the holidays in Oakland this weekend. Check out Joy to the Town Holiday Market at Jack London Square, and that's this Saturday. It's free and it's family friendly. There'll be over 40 artists and local retailers. There'll be a free concert with Ray Obiedo. I'm sorry, I pronounced his wrong, name wrong. Obiedo. He's a Latin jazz legend. Forgive me, I know I mispronounced his name, but his jazz ensemble will be performing along with Pete Escovedo. So that's gonna be really, really good. And also, too, there'll be roller skating with Oakland's Black Cultural Zone and free photos with Santa Claus.
Then on Sunday in Oakland is the 8th annual Black Sunday Holiday Shopping Experience at the Henry J. Kaiser Center for the Arts, and we'll post links on our website. In San Francisco, there's some stuff happening too, of course. In San Francisco, always something happening. But Grace Cathedral is premiering a Christmas concert, and it's called Stable of Grace. It's a brand new Christmas composition by Grammy Award-winning composer and DJ Mason Bates, and he is Grace Cathedral's 2025 Artist in Residence, and he's been on KLW many times. Thanks again for your support during this past Giving Tuesday. Thanks to all of our listeners here in the Bay Area and beyond. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Forgive my mistakes today. I am still recovering from Thanksgiving. That turkey had me in a good mood. All right. Until next time, be good to yourselves and each other.